This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, let's get into some money with Anthea and find out what's happening in the markets this morning. It's only customary to start with her song, and here it is, the song that you've come to love.
She works hard for the money, so hard for it, honey. She works hard for the money, so you better treat her right.
All right, you got me thinking. If you'd invested in the JSE 20 years ago, you'd have made 15% per annum, turning 100,000 rand into 1.6 million rand. Is that right, Anthea? Is that that was the number you gave me? Let me put on your microphone here. That might help. We're enjoying your song so much, so we just have to listen to that a little longer. All right, back to you.
All right, that is spot on. So okay. 15% per annum. So 100,000 rand, you would have turned into 1.6 million rand. But here's the thing. If you had missed out 75 of those 5,264 trading days, your return would have been zero. So you would have invested 100,000 and come out with 100,000.
Yeah.
If you'd missed out just 25 of those 5,264 days, your return would have been halved. So you would have made only half as much of the profit. So, and bear with me here. I mean, the US.
You've got to take baby steps with us. We're not good with maths. We're really shitty at it, actually.
Okay. So if you'd invested 20 years ago and stayed in the market, you would have turned 100,000 rand into 1.6 million rand.
Got you. Up to right. there, I'm good.
But if you had disinvested at some stage and missed out the top 75 trading days, and there are 5,264 trading days in 20 years, your return would have been zero. You would have only come out with 100,000 rand. Seems crazy, right?
It's insane. So that basically means you've got to be in it for the long haul.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you do not make the returns.
It's not about timing the market. It's about time in the market.
I got you.
Okay. By the way, so Naspers, you already know this, though. If you'd taken the 100,000 rand and invested just in Naspers, you would have made 5 million rand today. 20 mm-hmm. years, that would have mm-hmm. turned into. But, of course, if you'd invested the 100,000 rand into African Bank, you would have had zero. You would have lost your 100,000 rand. So it is quite a tough one, right? Because, I mean, those 20 years include the internet bubble. They also include the GFC. And of course, in South Africa, don't forget, it includes the mining slump. So the stocks like Anglo Billiton, they would have struggled as well. So what am I trying to say? I think you need to be invested in the market. You need to be invested in the right shares, and you need to stay in the market for a while. So not sell out when things get a little bit.
Right. Don't do a Gareth and like can Astoria and what was the other one that I
Capital
threw away?
Counties.
Capital and Counties.
The two that have been up 10% since you sold them.
Dumbass. All right.
All right. So there you go. That's today's little lesson. So let's talk about the market. We managed a nice positive close on Friday. There were no real standout performances. Banks regained some lost ground. Platinum shares were about 1% higher. Value traded, like things were just lackluster on Friday. I think everyone's just nervous about the SARS wars and this rand. It's just bleeding out. You know, on Friday it was 14.36. I can't believe that it's a rand weaker than where it was a week ago. Like, how does that happen?
In 1 week we've lost a rand.
Yeah. Against the dollar, right? From 13.31 to 14.36. More than a rand.
Yeah.
It's just shocking. And I think part of the lackluster trade on Friday was also that people were waiting to see what came out of Jackson Hole. And give me a second. I'll tell you what Jackson Hole is. You know, I told you it's the Central Bank Symposium. And it's quite funny because it started in 1978 as the Federal Reserve of Kansas City Symposium. Like, who cares?
So some tiny little state bank, right?
What rubbish is that? And they decided that it was a rather boring conference and they wanted to invite a prominent speaker. So they invited the U.S. Central Bank Governor, Paul Volcker, at the time.
Okay.
And they got him there because it's a big fly fishing community and he likes fly fishing. That's a real story.
We used to have a Reserve Bank Governor who liked fly fishing too.
Well, actually, so you know that it's by invitation only and Lucetia Kanyago was there last week. So I'm just saying, there you go.
I was talking about Tito. Tito used to love a little bit of fly fishing.
I'm aware of that. Yeah.
Very gentrified.
Apparently that's where he does all his thinking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But you know, Paul Volcker, the guy who did, who came up with the Volcker rule, he's attributed for this. And the banks hate him because he actually put a stop to proprietary trading. And what happens is, so for example, banks generally act as agents or facilitators. So what happens if I want to buy a million Naspers shares, for example, and I don't want to sit in the market and buy 100 here and 1,000 there. I want to buy a million, right? I phone up the banks and say, do you have a seller for a million? They try to find a seller. If they can, they put the buyer and the seller together. In other words, they facilitated the trade. Or they can take some of my trade onto their books. And then what they would do is either trade it out or take a position. And that means that they would have a position against me, which is not...
Sounds counterintuitive.
Exactly. So Paul Volcker was exactly like you. He said, I don't think this is a good thing. I need to put a stop to banks' proprietary trading. So he's not the most popular person in the banking world.
But he was right.
He was probably right, yes. Okay. Okay, back to Jackson Hole. So the idea or the topic was designing resilient monetary policy framework for the future. And for me...
That sounds terrible.
It sounds
boring. Sounds like the kind of thing that the ANC Women's League get together to discuss.
Okay. Well... I thought it was interesting, vaguely, because...
advancing people's power in communities.
Okay, I got it. Stop.
Okay.
So, but the point is that quantitative easing really hasn't worked. We've had low interest rates around the world. We've had negative bond interest rate yields. So, like, I think it's a good time to actually do it. It's a good time to be thinking about it. And for me, the big thing that came out of this... And I'm not sure that the newspapers have picked it up or the news agents have picked it up, is that I think the central bankers are worried about future recessions. So they're all saying, you know, well, before they've been burnt. Yeah. So they've had a balance sheet before GFC. The US Fed balance sheet was just under $1 trillion. It's now $5 trillion. That is huge. And in a normal company, that's fine because you're...
What does that mean? Hang on a second. A $5 trillion balance sheet.
Yeah. So if you add up the assets that they hold...
They being the central bank of the United States.
That's right.
Who do they represent? I mean, how do they account for that? They're a bank with that much cash in hand.
So no, it's not necessarily cash on hand. It's about assets. It's about owning assets.
If a company's valued at $1 trillion...
Well, if their balance sheet is worth $1 trillion, so you have to add up debt and you have to add up assets and cash and little bits.
This is their total valuation.
Yeah, that's right. And if a company goes from $1 trillion to $5 trillion, then it's a great thing because it's considered strengthening your balance sheet, right?
Right. Gotcha.
And in a normal company, what would happen is you would strengthen your balance sheet by increasing cash flow, your cash conversion rate. So when you sell something, how long does it take you to get that cash and to make it a free cash flow, number, right? As opposed to kind of having debt and liabilities. It's about shoring up assets and really return on assets. But if you're the Fed or a central bank, a bigger balance sheet, like actually think about it, like you can just roll out the printing press and print money. And that's got nothing to do with sweating your assets. So there's a real concern about how much cash and how much assets they're sitting on and why are they sitting on all these assets.
They're obviously nervous.
And so in the past, it was fine to just cut interest rates. But what Janet Yellen said on Friday was that actually, because they are worried about the U.S. and they're worried about the aging population, they're worried about growth not being as high as it previously was, that going forward, they are likely to have lower average interest rates than in the past. So start the GFC, you start cutting, and you just cut interest rates to stimulate the economy. But if this happens next time around, and you've got low interest rates, what are you going to do?
Hmm.
Yeah, so she said a couple of things. She said, and they all seem a bit, I don't know, I just kind of pie in the sky stuff. So she said, they already do buy assets. They're going to increase the range of assets. So in other words, make this balance sheet even bigger, but without actually sweating any assets. So there's a worry. And then she's going to think about raising the inflation target. And instead of looking at real GDP growth, she's going to look at nominal GDP growth. I think moving deck chairs on the Titanic, if you ask me. It's very worrying.
Right.
But yeah, she did say, one of the things she did say or that she made the market quite comfortable with was that they are happy as the US Fed to raise interest rates going forward. So you can expect a US interest rate hike fairly shortly. And I think December is probably most likely the first one. And she did say gradually, but you know, and you know what's going to happen, right? With the impact for us is that higher interest rates in the US, stronger dollar, weaker rand. And this in December when we've got the credit rating agency review. So it's all coming to a head kind of step by step, I'd say.
Sure. All right. What about back home? Let's look at the markets here, because I see our very rich friend Christo Visa has decided that he might be interested in diamond mining after all.
Yes. This is funny, actually.
Tell me about it.
It's not his first foray into diamonds, but he's bought into a company called Transex, which was founded in 1965, listed in 1981, has a market cap of just over 400 million rand. When they listed, I think they listed about, I forget now, it must have been 3 rand, but the share has traded as high as 28 rand a share, came off after the GFC, so 2009, the share just plummeted back to 3 rand, hasn't really moved between that 3 to 4 rand range. Suddenly, Christo Visa is interested. I'm not sure why, because actually diamond prices have fallen by 18% in the last year, and there definitely is, like, the things driving it, first of all, Chinese demand has slowed. And secondly, there's been a bit of a credit crunch in the industry itself. So buyers, you know, the people who cut and polish and manufacture the stones, actually have really struggled to hold their own above water because of this kind of decrease in demand. So I'm not sure where he's going with this. He's made a 3.91 rand offer to minorities. Shares trading at about 3.94 rand. I don't know. Make of that what you want. And his reason, so in an interview, his reason for buying Transhex, he said, because diamonds are wonderful things, things of beauty and everlasting value.
Yeah, but they're not.
Exactly.
Because that's such nonsense. We know that diamonds can be made, and they're going to be made even better and more flawless and more beautiful and more brilliant by artificial means than you will ever find in the ground, which seems to be a very complicated way of crushing carbon into a diamond crystal lattice rather than graphite. Now, I don't know why anyone would want to put money into this, because to me there's no reason to invest in something that is an old, unnecessary. You even told us a while ago that the advertising industry and the television business created a demand for diamonds. Nobody cared about diamonds before that.
Diamonds is a sentiment-driven, if you like, and I'm going to put this in inverted commas, investment. So in the 1930s, De Beers took Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend to Hollywood, and that's how they increased diamond sales. And in fact, that's how they made diamond become the engagement ring, the stone for engagement rings.
Yeah.
So it's not like a huge legacy thing that we all think of, this big tradition from kind of before days gone by, you know?
Well.
So very interesting, and it feels like a
this is the song.
Die for love. They delight in fighting duels. But I prefer a man who lives.
It's Marilyn Monroe. This is where the whole thing started, right?
Absolutely.
Not everybody listens.
Kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend.
My body agrees.
A kiss may be grand, but it won't pay the rental on your humble flat or help
you. Anyway, all right, so that's how diamonds started.
Yeah, listen, I'm not opposed to diamonds, okay? Just not in my investment portfolio. That's where I'm going with that.
Got you.
And then just offshore, a couple of things. Well, actually, talk about diamonds. This reminds me. Do you remember the company Atlas Mara, who were bidding for Barclays? They put out their results, and the diamond connection is because it started by Bob Diamond from Barclays Bank, right?
Yes, of course.
And so Atlas Mara was his financing company, and he was going to bid for Barclays. And we haven't heard about him for a while, but they put out their results a while ago, and actually they lost $6.7 million in the period. I think it was first half profits, and mostly because of Nigerian banks. The share has fallen 66% since it started trading in December 2013. So I'm wondering if he's still going to make a play for Barclays Africa Group. That was kind of an aside because of this diamond story. Sorry. I wanted to talk about Uber, because Uber put out their first half of the year results couple of days ago now, as well.
They're not a listed company.
No, they're not. But they have lots of private shareholders, people who have invested or people who have loaned their money, and particularly the banks. And if you're a registered company, you need to have audited financials anyway. And if you're a listed company, you need to make them public. But I think they make them public anyway. And it's interesting to see what happened here, because revenue for the quarter grew to $1.1 billion. And that's on bookings of $5 billion. And I'm telling you that because now you can work out what the margin is that they make on your ride. Hmm. So they made revenue of 1.1, bookings was 5 billion. There you go.
Okay, so they make a fortune.
20%, more or less.
It's right? A fortune.
It is a fortune. It's not bad, but not a fortune enough, because they've actually made a loss of, since they started, $4 billion.
Oof.
And can you believe?
You've got to be able to swallow that up in the beginning,
right? Well, that's what it is, yeah. And so actually, they, if you look at it properly, because of the debt they've got and kind of the financing that they've achieved to raise, they actually are still well capitalized. And have you heard of Uber Eats, by the way?
No, tell me about this.
So Uber Eats is the delivery business, and I know they operate in London, and they've expanded to the big cities. So they're in Sussex, they're in Essex, they're in the big cities are Manchester, I forget now, but there you go.
So Birmingham.
Birmingham. Birmingham.
Yeah.
It's a different app to Uber, but it's the same, basically.
It's like Mr. Delivery.
There you go, but with Uber. I think it's quite clever because it helps the cars with downtime.
Yeah, you see, the point for those guys is any time that you're not making money in your car is time that you're losing money.
Mm.
There's no kind of neutral place to be. And if you can make more, whether it's delivering food or giving someone a lift, you should.
Exactly.
Right.
But that's the whole thing, like, about a business. It's sweating your assets, yeah. Kind of. So there's a whole big theory, and I have lots of ideas on this about how companies that rent office space only use it for 12 hours a day when actually they should be using for 24, blah, blah, blah. But that's a whole nother, that's Jeez. Another podcast,
you
right?
You would sweat those assets to the point of death. Anthea's assets would be in the gym 24/7.
Yeah, what are we doing with this studio during night hours, Gareth?
Well, don't worry. From Thursday on, we're going to be sweating this here motherfucking asset. You just watch.
Okay, I get it when I'm being taken.
No, not at all. You're absolutely right.
It's like people have cars, right? They pay insurance on them. They pay installments on them. They use them, 3 hours a day probably?
Worst thing.
Yeah.
It's not an asset.
And
a car is not an asset.
Yeah, it absolutely
it's
is not.
It's a depreciating liability.
Yes.
It's a Jackson
yes.
Hole.
It's almost as bad as a child.
Oh, and then we're on to the sentiment.
But is a child not a terrible asset to have? I mean, a liability?
I don't know. Look, I'm not going to get into this one. Look, maybe your child will pay for you when you retire.
Oh, it's a big if.
So I don't have children, so I don't know, okay? Please don't. Right.
Come on, we all know what the answer to that one is. Anthea's darting around on this. Normally, she's very forthright about what she feels. Here, this morning, she's trying not to upset people.
I'm literally squirming in my chair. All right. So the week ahead, London's closed today.
Yeah.
But we've got some big companies reporting. I'm going to Bidvest later on. We've got Suntime, Grand Parade are reporting this week. And I'm going to watch that carefully because I want to know what they're doing. You know, there was all the excitement around the lottery and then they didn't get it. And now they're stalled almost.
Mm.
And then the other thing, there's lots of shares going ex-div on Wednesday. And I think, I'm not sure if I've reminded you about this, but remember when we moved to T+3 trading? So trading settlement on the third day, it used to be T+5. And because of that, the ex-div day has moved from Monday to Wednesday. So what happens when a share goes ex-div is that it falls by the price that it is no longer trading the dividend off. So if you have a share that's trading at 100 rand and it's paying a 1 rand dividend, you can almost guarantee the day it goes ex-div, it'll trade at 99 rand. So you no longer have, if you buy the share, you are no longer privy to receiving the dividend. So of course it's worth 1 rand less, right?
Got you.
All right, that's me. Have a good week.
And that's just to stop people buying so that they can just get the dividend and then get out again.
Yeah, at some stage they can't be eligible for the dividend anymore.
All right, so lots of reporting this week. We'll talk Bidvest, Suntime, Grand Parade and all those on Wednesday.
Perfect.
Thank you very much, Anthea.
Pleasure. Bye.
There's a quick look at the markets with Anthea Gardner.
This is CliffCentral.com.